Hello, diamond beauties and interdimensional beings of light. It's Lisa here, your mystic guide, inviting you to come and take a ride with me as we journey through space and time. Our mission is to create conscious content for 1111D, sharing resources of light for the new reality. Welcome to the Buddhist Biohacker.
Buddhist Biohacker would like to thank our partners Block Therapy, Purity Coffee, Dry Farm Wines, Omnia, and 2-1 Photography. Information can be found on lisamgunshore.com. Join our forum at miwi.com/Buddhist Biohacker and watch live on YouTube on the Buddhist Biohacker channel.
Well, good afternoon, everyone. Good evening, good morning, wherever you are across the globe. And welcome to another episode of the Buddhist Biohacker. Buddhist Biohacker is creating conscious content for 1111D, and we have been chugging along this entire year. We're almost to our 150th episode, if you guys can believe it. So thank you to everybody who's joining in now and who has listened all year long. Just a reminder to everybody that Buddhist Biohacker is taking a stand against violence. So remember that your violence can even be in the words that you're using on social media. So please use compassion and light and provoke independent thought when you are writing comments, everybody. So keep that in mind. And I'm so excited to have our guest with us today, Sean McNamara. He is the author of Renegade Mystic, among many other things. And welcome to the show, Sean.
Thanks, Lisa. It's great to be here.
Yeah, I'm so happy to have you on. And you've been such a great teacher in my own life. And, you know, I read your book and it's packed with so much stuff. We're not going to get to all of it in an hour, I don't think. And to everybody joining in the live, by the way, you guys can ask your questions to Sean throughout this as well. But I want to start out with having you just share a little bit about who you are and what you do for our community that's new to you.
Yeah. Well, I guess these days I refer to myself as an author, but I'm also a student. I'm in grad school right now for counseling. My life story basically is, I'd say I've been focused on spirituality most of my adolescence to adulthood because I was driven by a sense of fear about death and what happens afterwards. So that was kind of the seed that's fueled much of what's happened to me even to today. And so I've explored formal spiritual traditions. And then I've gone most recently in the last few years into psychic exploration because that arena is generally without any dogma or there aren't that many rules. So that's been my place for discovering my own consciousness and spirituality that way. And, and then I'm just a regular guy. I'm a husband and I work and I have online courses. And before COVID, I was teaching classes and so on one hand, that's the definition of me. And I think like so many other people, I don't know who I am right now. 2020 is such a strange year and I have no idea what my life will look like in the future. So it's just how it is.
It is. We are definitely in the great unknown for sure right now, which I think is probably the point. But So I thought about like where I want to dive in because there's definitely a lot and I have your book right here. So if you guys are interested, it's Renegade Mystic and I read through it and I think where I'm going to start with the heavy hitters and then we'll go into all the fun NDEs and OBEs and bending spoons and all that stuff. But, you know, one of the things that you talk about in your book is you share, you know, really vulnerable stories of what happened to you in your own religious training, study, whatever you want to call it in your journey. And there's something that's really been coming to mind for me during this time of the Great Awakening, essentially, which is gurus falling from grace. Mm-hmm. And I think one very direct example is what's happened with the Kundalini community and Yogi Bhajan and what has come out with him with everything from sexual assault, trafficking weapons, and Lord knows what else. And so with all of that said, you know, we don't have to, if you guys want to know the story, you can read about it. We don't have to go into all the details. But really my question for you is, What is your advice and thoughts and feelings about these idols falling? Because it's, for some people, it's Hollywood. For some people, it's a guru. For some people, it's a politician, right? But this year, this great awakening is this falling from it and all of us having to look back at ourselves. And so I'm digging into the heavy stuff first, but I'll throw that to you.
Yeah, no, that's a great topic. And I think it is really important right now because the availability of information because of the internet and things like that makes it really easy for us to learn about things that maybe in the past, before 20 or 30 years ago, could easily remain in the shadows in terms of what people are doing that they might not letting other people know about. So in terms of gurus or CEOs or teachers, anyone in a position of power, they have their public persona. But today it's easier than ever to discover things about their private persona, especially when people are getting hurt. So in a way it's a blessing, but it's a painful blessing because all our idols are falling down and we're realizing, you know, that our idols are people and they have their own baggage, their own traumas, their own history. Maybe they have psychological issues that we weren't aware of. And it's funny because there's so much pop psychology, popular psychology, which is not necessarily a bad thing. It means everyone's getting educated about how fragile the human mind is. And that even if someone is in a position of power, doesn't mean that they have all their stuff together. It doesn't mean that they've healed all their wounds or that they're impervious to losing their sense of empathy for the people who they are in power over or in power with. And I think, sadly, that means that we're kind of losing trust in our leadership. But at the same time, we're getting smarter. And hopefully people are getting smarter at choosing who they put themselves beneath or whose organizations or religions or spiritualities or schools or corporations they join. So I think one piece of advice for me would be if you're considering joining something, whether it's a job or a religion or a church or a small group even, look at yourself and then look at the leadership who's sort of the face of the organization. And it's always good to ask, why am I attracted to this? What am I getting fulfilled by this persona, this personality? What are the promises that are being made? What am I missing inside of myself? And why do I believe that this person or this tradition is going to fill that for me? Because sometimes it's very basic. It could just be that that person reminds you of one of your parents or another loved one or someone you used to have romantic relations with. Or there could be some very simple subconscious reason why you're attracted, which is not a great reason to put yourself under someone's wing, so to speak, or to give your power over to someone else. So look inside first. Like, be honest, why am I attracted to this? Is it because all my friends are doing it or they're attracted to it? Do I see my friends improving in their life? Are they getting the questions that they have answered? Or are they all sort of just absorbing this belief system that's being given to them? So, you know, you want to look at the people who are involved and do you see changes happening there that you want to see in yourself? The other question you should ask, that anyone should ask, is how much of your own personal power do you need to surrender to that source of information, that person, the organization? And it's not only about how much money that they're going to require from you. And I'm not saying it's bad to pay money for spiritual teachings. You know, there's an exchange there for someone's time and their wisdom or their experience. It's very fair to ask for an exchange of energy in terms of money. You know, if they didn't get paid money, they'd have to go get a regular job to pay their bills. So money's fine. But how much money is fair? And how much does money represent your place in that hierarchy? So that's one way that you could lose your personal power. Also, do you really believe that this person or organization has the final answer that you're looking for? And why? You know, is it evidence-based or is it belief system that you're just going to absorb and take it on as your own? And finally, do you believe that this, let's say it's a guru situation, a teacher situation, are they, do you see them as being better than you implicitly in some way? Do they have more value in them as a human than you do? And if you see that, I would really recommend that you get a second opinion. Go see a counselor, a therapist, talk to your family about it. Why do you think that this person is better, or they know more about reality than you do? Because it's very easy for someone to appear to have the answers, to know something, but they might just be repeating something that's been written in scriptures for 1,000 years, and they haven't really changed inside of themselves. It's really easy to appear very highly spiritual, but you take them off, you know, put them in regular street clothes, give them a regular day job, put them in middle, lower class housing in some city and see who they become then in a normal situation. There's a phrase I've been thinking of lately. You know, there's that phrase like white privilege, which is a very real thing. And I'm looking at myself as a white person. I think there's also spiritual privilege. You can create, anyone can create a persona of themselves as being a spiritual leader. Mm-hmm. And then you surround yourself by people who support your bubble, and they meet all your needs, and they make you feel like a really special person. And I'm sort of speaking for personal experience, because there was an organization I used to be part of where I was, you know, climbing the ranks and becoming a senior teacher and having a certain vibe. And it's really easy to start to believe that you're special when you're given a title, except that it's totally artificial. So when you look at someone, look at the aura around them. And I mean the aura of the people who support their imagery and how much, you know, is this real? And then follow that funny feeling you get in your tummy. You know, take a close look and maybe take a step back. And always see, are there other ways you could seek the answers that you're seeking? Maybe ways that where you don't have to give yourself over so much. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, I'm painting some broad strokes. And it's for people who are considering something new. You know, there's a whole other conversation about people who realized they're in a bad situation and they need to leave, which is really painful, because leaving a community where most of your friendships might be, where your identity has been formed into adulthood, leaving that community means leaving your own identity. And it's really, really painful and very sad. And it kind of means walking away from so much of everything you've known for the last few years. Let's say you've been in this community for a few years, and that's where all your friendships are. And you have to walk away and find your own way at a certain point. If you want to make that decision for yourself, it's really hard to do. And so what do you replace that with? Because I don't know if I'm going on and on. But
no, I love it. I mean, I'm tracking just fine. Yeah, I mean, I think self-inquiry is very important. And I agree. I mean, I think looking at why you are idolizing or idealizing a being. And I think both of us come from a place where spiritual teachers or communities that we've been involved with have ultimately been disappointing or fallen out of alignment with the very practices they're teaching, right? Mm-hmm. And so I'm right there with you. I mean, I agree. I mean, I think it really comes back to ourselves, because the best spiritual teachers do not deny their humanity. They accept and share it. And I also think that those spiritual teachers always point you back to yourself. I think that's when you know you've got a good one, is when they say, go back to you, mm-hmm. who you are and what I reflect in you. So no, totally. I love it. Because it's a real thing right now that there's certainly a leveling of the playing field as we go through this particular catalyst for ascension. I mean, that's what's happening. And so I think it's important to talk about. So I want to talk about, so you share in your book in this theme of like kind of coming out of really what could be a program, I suppose, if you wanted to use that terminology in a spiritual program. And what was that moment like for you when you finally, I shouldn't say finally, but when you had that realization of self and thought, this is no longer serving me and I'm going to walk away from it? What was that like for you, and what do you want to share about that?
Sure. Well, if I narrowed down that moment, I would say, well, I'll paint a background. And the background is, I was part of an organization. a spiritual group with a guru or with a teacher who had a lot of power over the members of the group. And I was starting to feel frustrated. I was starting to see some of the negative stuff happening there. And I started on my own, going on my own journey on the side while I was still a member of this group. And that journey was about learning how to have an out-of-body experience. Because again, my initial driver for my spirituality was fear of death. And I thought, if I could have an out-of-body experience, then I'd have direct experience of a non-physical part of me. And then I could have some level of confidence that would go on after my body dies. And that would give me a great relief. So I started training myself just from what I could pick up from books to have one. And then finally I had my first one and I started having more after that. But that very first one instantly released me from my fear of death. And at the same time, it released me from thinking I had to get answers from that spiritual teacher or from that tradition. I even stopped believing that they actually had all the answers, because up until that moment, I thought, okay, they know what's going on. But I realized that's just written or verbal information. And what I just had was an actual experience that has released me. And I didn't need a guru's blessing to have an out-of-body experience. I didn't need to give anyone tons of money. I didn't have to go on lots of retreats. I just learned the techniques from books I could buy in any bookstore and practiced them over and over and over again and did the hard work and freed myself from my own fear. So that was a moment of like, oh, wow. But that was quickly followed by a little bit of terror, because I realized that I had no excuse for remaining a member of that group and for continuing to give my personal power to someone else. And I knew that at a certain point, sooner than later, ideally, I would have to say goodbye. In fact, I mean, I even made an appointment and saw my teacher in person, face to face, privately, where I said, I don't like what you're doing. Also, I found my answer on my own. And it's time for us to go in different ways. But I was so scared to do that, because I still loved my teacher. You know, even though I realized I don't agree with what that teacher is doing, I still loved that person, because over the years I learned so much from them. And I really appreciated a lot of what I learned about meditation and other ways of looking at my own consciousness I'd learned from this person. So it was painful to walk away, like end that relationship, because I did get so many good things from it. But still, to stay in my integrity, I had to tell that person, I don't agree with what you're doing or with how you're treating people. Because that person had changed over time. Mm-hmm. You know, it's just what happens when you get more power and more followers, right? A person's behavior changes.
Yeah.
But I was so scared to say goodbye, and partly scared because I was scared of how angry that person might become or how they might respond. And my fear was verified, because they ended up sending an email to probably everyone I've ever met through that organization, sort of sliding my reputation a little bit, which was kind of dirty. So I was right to be afraid. But it ended up not being such a big deal, but it was very hurtful. But it was terrifying, because once I realized I found my own way and I don't need this other way or this other community, it meant walking away. And I did have so many dear friends, but I knew that I couldn't stay. Mm-hmm. I'd have to go and be by myself for a long time and kind of rebuild my own identity as this new person and walk away from being seen as a teacher and going to a space where I actually don't know any answers anymore. Because having an out-of-body experience gave me confidence that part of me is non-physical. But that's about it. Like now, through everything I've experienced since then, I realize I know so little. I have tools to look. I have tools to ask questions and get information and experiences. But all that does is open up more and more questions about reality and the universe. So these days, it's so easy. It's actually quite easy to say, I don't know. I don't have any answers. I'm definitely not going to be anyone's guru or teacher. I'm happy to be someone's friend or to share techniques, but that's about all I can offer. And everyone has to go off and find their own answers and do the work, which is a challenge, I think, for a lot of people today, that to be with someone who's not going to give you answers, but they're going to give you a lot of work.
That's what we do here at Buddhist Biohacker. So you're part of us. Yeah. It's true. Like it's the inner work and the independent thought and research and the practices and I think the ultimate humility is exactly what you're talking about. When you have an experience and you see the interdimensional reality that does exist, it's like, well, who the heck knows what's true? I mean, really?
Yeah.
I'm with you. It's like, I don't know. Like all people will say, oh, is the moon real? It's like, I don't know. I think there was two, but maybe there was three. Who knows? I mean, we don't know. Mm-hmm. Just like you're saying, it's like an impossible thing. I want to talk about your out-of-body experiences. We've had the documentary that I made this year is all about near-death experiences. I mean, we have a lot of them in that documentary. And so we've talked about that all throughout the year and have had some paranormal experts on. But out-of-body experiences are fun to talk about because they're all different and all the same at the same time. And so you really were focused on this. There's a lot of information in your book about it, which I love because I nerd out on all that stuff. And so what do you want to share about like your out-of-body experiences? Because there's the first one, there's all these other different ones. So I think I'll leave it up to you about like what about your experiences do you want to share or have seen or felt or?
Yeah, I suppose the first thing is that each one has been unique. Because I sort of thought, oh, once I learn to leave my body, maybe I'll just stroll down my hallway and then walk around from there. But no, you know, sometimes that did happen. Sometimes I suddenly attained consciousness in a totally different place, maybe on Earth, out in outer space, in another place that maybe is an after-death location, and then meeting different kinds of beings along the way. I suppose one thing is, some people wonder if you learn how to do this, is it instant? Like you could just decide, I want to have one tonight. And maybe for some people they can do that. But in my personal experience, it's the kind of thing where I have to, if I say I want to have another one these days, I have to train with the techniques over and over and over again. And it could be a period of days, weeks, or even a few months before it happens. So there's something about getting the mind, the whole mind, the subconscious, our deeper self, all on board to do this, and then it just happens. So it's not like, oh, I'm going to have one tonight, which I think some people can definitely do that with lucid dreaming a little easier, but an out-of-body experience is difficult from my experience. Mm-hmm. The other thing is some people are engaged in this debate about, is an out-of-body experience the same thing as a lucid dream? And there are a lot of reasons why I think that they're different, but ultimately I think all kinds of consciousness, whether you're wide awake or you're meditating or you're daydreaming, dreaming, lucid dreaming, out-of-body experience, near-death experience, they're all part of this broad spectrum of consciousness. And sometimes they can combine. I've had, I don't know if I put this in the book, but I've had dreams where I use them as leaping off points to have an out-of-body experience. And I've had an out-of-body experience and a dream at the exact same time, and they're different. It's like two different things happening. Mm-hmm. I've also had a dream where my self-consciousness, my sense of self, is divided into two characters, which is really, really weird and difficult to put into words, where I'm this person and I'm having 100% self experience, but then I'm also this character in the dream. I'm divided, but I'm fully embodied in these two characters at the same time, which is so strange. And I didn't try to have it. It just happened automatically. When I first started with my out-of-body experiences, I tried to remain fully in control, like deciding what I wanted to experience or what I was going to do. And I realized that I usually had the best time and the most meaningful experiences when I released control after the separation stage. After I was initially right out of my physical body, I surrendered with the idea that maybe my higher self or my subconscious self or the part of me that knows better would do the driving from that point on. And when I got better at giving up control, I had better experiences that were more meaningful to me ultimately. There were much deeper experiences that way. So it's a balance about taking control and doing the training and doing the techniques and then finally lifting out and then surrendering to something bigger than myself, to no matter whatever happens, you know, which I think is good on a spiritual level too. There's a sense of letting go, of relaxation, of not being so aggressive about it, and trusting who knows what, but a level of trust to know whatever happens next, it's probably going to be good for me to experience. So, yeah.
Yeah, I agree with you. I have a very similar viewpoint of what it's like. I've been a lucid dreamer since I was probably born. So I have always been conscious most of my sleep state. So for hours and hours and hours, I'm just floating around and doing all sorts of things. So I love what you're talking about that being a lifting off point. One of my favorite books is The Yogas of Dream and Sleep by Tenzin Wangyal Rinpoche, because it's so powerful. Those techniques are so powerful. And if you can be in that lucid dream state and step out and start moving on the astral plane, it can be such an incredible experience for sure. And but like you, I've had experiences where my consciousness is split. I've recently had some very interesting experiences about death where I've been shown the experience of it in a new way, which has been interesting because I've talked to people who passed away for so long. And then all of a sudden it's like, oh, this is like a whole different thing. So it's very interesting. You can learn a lot by having these experiences. And I'm curious what your favorite one has been. Like, do you have like a favorite where it's like, that was like the most amazing thing that happened of all the things?
Oh, well, I've got a couple and they're very different. I'll try and tell the first one without crying. But basically, I this is one of the ones where I kind of let go. And then I suddenly found myself in this area. It's an outdoor area. And there's a hillside on the side. And there were a lot of children there. And they all had this very shocked and dazed look on their face. But they were all waiting. It's like they were being cared for. And there were just a few adults there kind of tending to them. And then off to the side, there were some pools of water. And there were these adults with a child and just sort of washing them. And the thing, and I think some people would agree that maybe it's the same with lucid dreaming as an out of body experience, that sometimes things are not what they seem, but they're symbolic. Mm-hmm. And there's this whole issue of our physical brain, the gray matter, is trying to translate what's happening in these other arenas. It's trying to translate it. So symbolism is important. So I think that the bathing that I was witnessing and the water over the children may not have been literal water or literal bathing, but these adult beings were taking care of them. And I knew intuitively, and that's how a lot of information, a lot of knowing happens, is it's not with words, but it's this direct knowing. These children had recently crossed over, they'd recently died on Earth, and here they are. And maybe it was from an accident or maybe something else, but they're all together. And then these adults are sort of caring for them, helping them get used to their new reality or help them heal from whatever shock occurred when they crossed over. Mm-hmm. And from that scene, I ended up going somewhere else. But then I realized there was a boy following me. We were sort of floating through the sky. And then we started hanging out just... It didn't last that long, but there was this strange thing that happened that has happened in other experiences and in the dream state where a sense of, I know this boy. I've known him maybe in another lifetime or somewhere else. And then the most powerful feeling of love came over me. Like, I love this child. Maybe like he was my son or my brother or dear friend or something, but this overwhelming needing to care and appreciate, such a rare opportunity to reconnect in this state, because maybe it had been 10,000 years since the last time I saw him. But for some reason, there was this affinity across the ages and across consciousness, you know, it was so powerful. And I felt that for other people. I actually had an experience a couple of weeks ago where it was a girl, like maybe 10 years old, and just suddenly like feeling fatherly toward her and just this love. And I'm not a father in this life. It's just not in the cards for me. but now I'm starting to understand when parents talk about their newborn baby and that amount of love, I think maybe I'm getting a taste of that because it is incredible. So that's maybe my very favorite one. There's another interesting one that has a little bit of a twist to it, because in this one, I go down some stairs in the out of body state, but then I scraped my hand and started to bleed, which is interesting because I don't have a physical body, but I was bleeding. But then I knew what was going on. I knew I was having an out of body experience. So I shook it off and instantly the blood was gone, which is a sign that this was just a mental projection. The whole thing was just a subjective impression I was putting on the experience. And then it ended soon after. But the next day in physical life, in wide awake life, my wife was carrying her laundry down the same staircase. And she ended up scraping her hand in the exact same spot and having a little bit of blood there.
Wow.
Which I thought was weird. I was like, oh, I had an out-of-body experience that went into the future into my wife's experience. Like I had someone else's experience. Since then, I've done more exploration with remote viewing, a type of clairvoyance that is connected with precognition, you know, tuning into the future experiences. So I think there my out-of-body experience had that precognitive quality to it about someone else's experience, which again is another sign or a clue that all of this experience is like Indra's net. You know, it's all intertwined. It's all interconnected across space and time and levels of consciousness. And at a very deep level, we're not separate, you know. So those are a couple of my favorites.
Yeah. I love it. I've talked about it on the show before probably, but my favorite thing is I go swim with the whales. And I don't, it's been a thing and it doesn't happen very often. You know, it's probably every few years or something I'll come out of my body and be flying through the air. And I always go north to this cold ocean space. I don't really know what it is, but it's a cold ocean space. And I'll fly above the water. And the sensation of that for anyone who's astral traveled, and I'm sure you know this, Sean, it's like there's nothing more freeing and liberating than that. Mm-hmm. Flying feeling. And I'll skim my fingers along the water and touch the whales when they come out of the water and just hang out with the whales. And whenever I have that experience, I know I must be in a really good spiritual space, because yeah. It seems like whenever I'm really clear physically, emotionally, that's when I get to go see the whales. It's like this like treat or something I get, but that's like probably my favorite. But I will say I haven't really shared this other than a brief blog post recently, but I have been receiving these out-of-body experiences. And what's different about 2020, and it's one of my questions for you too, is like this year's different. The timelines are all different. Everything's blending together, it seems. And a lot of people in the community have written about this. And so I'm having a lot of out-of-body experiences in the middle of my day, like where it's like, where the hell did I just go? Because I'm not even like sitting in my office anymore. But I had this really incredible experience very recently about, they've been teaching me or showing me this new information about those that have passed on. And they took me out of my body, you know, and showed me that as at the time of death, you know, you leave your body, right? And then they showed in an instant, I turned around and I could see some of my family members there coming to be with me. And the message or the information, I mean, it was so powerful, and I'm still processing it really because it just happened a few weeks ago. But really, the time is so not real outside of this linear experience. And so what I felt or what I got from that intuitively was, you know, everybody asks, you know, did my loved ones meet someone and are they going to wait for me? And it's just this instantaneous thing. And it's like, there is no waiting. Like once you leave, you turn around and your loved ones are right there. It's not like you're waiting for 30 years for them to pass away. That doesn't exist. It's not real. And so it's really powerful. And I'm, you know, not sure where to go with that except to say it was really cool and I wanted to share it. And we have some really great questions. And so I have several questions. One is, have you experienced you know, timelines changing this year with things that seem to be happening with the frequencies of the planet. Jackie has a great question. Is it possible to have a random out-of-body experience? And then we also have a comment that out-of-body experiences aren't accessible to everyone. And I disagree, and I think that's a good question to talk about is, you know, what your thoughts are on that as well. So wherever you want to go with all those questions I just threw at you.
Sure, yeah, I'll try and put them all together. The thing about me is I'm sort of like I'm a thick-headed, slow learner, so none of this psychic stuff comes naturally to me. Everything I've learned, I had to work really, really hard at. So I just say that as a way of hopefully offering people hope. If you want to have the experience, you can have it. It's nearly impossible for me, but I work really hard at it. And I think if you really work hard at it too, and don't give up. And if you're working on an instruction or technique and it doesn't work, feel free to set it aside and seek a different technique. You know, get another book, find another teacher, a teacher who won't take your power away. Find some other teacher and just keep hacking away at it. And you'll eventually have the experience. All you have to do, I believe, is just don't give up. And if it really matters to you and you really want to have it, you can. It might also mean that you have to change some other things in your life, because if you're, and I don't mean this negatively, I don't mean to be aggressive, but if someone's watching 4 hours of TV a day and maybe they're using a lot of different substances that affect the mind or, you know, things like that, and then they maybe meditate for 20 minutes, it's not likely that they're going to move ahead in whatever spiritual domain they want to explore. You have to switch your priorities around so that you really sort of become like a yogi practicing amidst ordinary life. You have your job, but then you're meditating or doing whatever training you need to do, but you're really dedicating a lot of time to it on a regular basis, and also regulating the levels of stress you're experiencing. And we all have so much stress now, so regulating is a little more difficult, but spending more time in nature, eating healthy, getting enough sleep, staying off of unnecessary social media. I think there's a smart way to use social media, and then there's a way where you just waste away hours of your day, so don't do that. So it's really about maintaining yourself on an energetic, emotional, spiritual, and physical level. All of those need to be tended to while you're trying to achieve whatever you're trying to achieve, which I think you could say the same thing about regular life. You know, if you want to get ahead in business or whatever, you have to tune in to take care of all these levels. But for some people, it's harder than others. And for me, it's really hard, but I've still managed to pull it off. Some people do have spontaneous or random out-of-body experiences. There's a lot about it in the literature, in the books. A lot of people, when they're children especially, have spontaneous out-of-body experiences. And why we know this is partly because you have friends who've left and then they have their experience and they're not sure if it's, maybe they don't know the word out-of-body or astral travel, but they know the word dream. And they tell each other the dream they had and they realize that they were both having the same dream. Or maybe they both went to the same place, so there was an out-of-body experience. So as children, it's more common to have spontaneous occurrences. But it's also in the literature that people, marathon runners, while they're running, they'll separate and they can see themselves from above while they're running. Women who are in the midst of giving birth in the hospital room will leave their body. People who have been assaulted or attacked, maybe even while they're being attacked, they'll separate, and that's a defense mechanism. And some people just in the middle of the night, they feel their bodies vibrating and shaking, and then they leave and realize that they had an out-of-body experience. So it does happen spontaneously for some people, but not for everybody. So there's so many different ways it can happen. And I would just really caution anyone who's interested in exploring this, be careful, don't turn anything you read or hear into dogma. And there's a lot of garbage on the internet. So be careful what Facebook groups you get information from, because there are people talking about it, even though they haven't had the experience themselves. There are people talking about it from their own spiritual bias. And everyone has bias. I have bias. That, you know, there are people who are fear-mongering. They get excited about all the fearful stuff. and that's what they focus on. Don't let that color your perception of it. Have your own experience. So take everything with a grain of salt. Don't believe it until you experience it yourself. So you can always practice any technique without having to take on the beliefs behind it, and then form your own beliefs out of your own experience. So to recap, you know, it can happen spontaneously, and you can also train for it. And some people, they'll train for a few weeks and it happens. Some people have to train for a few years and it'll happen. And hopefully you don't have a heart attack and have a near-death experience, because that's another way to have it. You know, we don't want it to happen that way. But if it does, it does. And then you get to come back and tell people about it too. So it's a broad topic. It can happen in so many different ways. But if you really want it, if you really want to have it, you can have it. But you might have to work pretty hard at it. But you can do it, because you're a sentient being. You have consciousness. And it's not permanently tied to your skin and bones. So I think I covered the two people's questions, but now I'm having trouble remembering your question, Lisa.
Okay, and I'm looking at the comments going, man. While you were talking about meeting in a dream, Sean, Tamara says her ex-husband and her had the same dream the same night. So they're definitely traveling together. And then Sienna says, my brother and I used to plan to meet up in our dreams. Mm. And recently I had a horrible dream where he was shot in the head. And when I called him the next day, he had been shot in his own dream. Oh my God.
Wow.
Oh my gosh. So yeah, that's pretty crazy stories. And yeah, the question was, I was wondering if you've experienced like timeline shifts this year. It definitely has felt like everything's kind of blending together, and part of that can be the human experience with the quarantine and the global event. But I'm just curious if you've seen or experienced that.
Yeah, I can't say I have. I mean, part of it is just that maybe I'm just bogged down in my own stuff. My wife has a meditation center that just recently got closed down. It just closed as a business because of the pressure from COVID. So there's that whole personal stress and pressure of losing your business that we've been dealing with this year. And then just the anxiety about COVID and how we're going to get through this. And so I think maybe I've been too focused on my own stuff to really pick up on other things like timeline shifting, which is tough and kind of sad for me, because I think systemic stress for some people can reduce their sensitivity to that deeper aspect of ourselves. And I'm certainly feeling it. But at the same time, when I feel really pressured, that's also when I have a spontaneous experience of consciousness. It's like I'm being squeezed and my deeper self is like, we need to crack out of this for a moment and just reconnect with our deeper nature. And it'll do that. But I can't plan it. It happens on its own. But I'm basically just working on very ordinary physical levels and stress regulation in the mind. So maybe I'm just blind to things happening on other timelines right now.
I don't think you're blind, but I think you're right. I mean, I think there's definitely there's a lot of focus on the linear right now in all aspects because of what we're going through this year, for sure. So yeah. I agree with that. I want to talk a little bit about Mind Possible and the things that you do. I want to do like a whole separate show on remote viewing, because I could talk about that forever too. Because I get very fascinated about remote viewing, and I get very fired up about the use of psychics in all sorts of ways. So that gives me, for some reason, some kind of like, what's the word I'm looking for? But I get righteous about it. That's really what I want to say. It's like, no, don't use those gifts that way. But then I love remote viewing too, because it's really fun to mess around with remote viewing and doing that through out-of-body experiences. But anyway, I want to talk a little bit about Mind Possible and what you do, what you're doing now, what your research looks like. I know you have some different things going on.
Yeah, so basically I take the approach that anything I learn to do myself, I immediately turn around and start teaching it to other people. And part of that, I mean, sort of this year when I wrote Renegade Mystic, I wrote it because I was afraid, what if I got sick and died this year? Because I didn't understand COVID. And I thought, it's a real risk. I could get sick. So I at least wanted to get that out. And so that's my approach why I turn around and teach something as soon as I learn it, because I feel like again, it's a blessing of the internet, a blessing of how we can communicate so quickly with each other that we can just gain information and spread it really quickly. And hopefully the benefit multiplies really quickly that way. So after the out-of-body experience, I learned how to do telekinesis. So moving really small objects with the mind, but it's another example of our interconnectedness with our world. So I wanted to teach that to people, and I have been teaching meditation already. And then the remote viewing, and in terms of telekinesis, that's kind of, it falls under psychokinesis, which means movement with the psyche. And so the spoon bending, which has been around for so many years, it seems to comes and go in terms of people's awareness of it. But so I taught that a little bit and did some online live stuff so people could actually follow along the video, and they still do and succeed at it, and they have their kids do it, and they're bending metal that they normally couldn't bend with their muscles alone. So these children are bending spoons and forks with their energetic intention, which is beautiful to see. And right now, you know, I'm actually feeling faded out energetically. And that might be just from doing so much teaching in the last couple of years, but and also dealing with stress. But I'm focusing on spending time with small groups of people, exploring remote viewing, because for me, it's an interesting thing using precognition to get information about the future. And I use the lottery sometimes as an exercise, because the lottery is a random event. So it's sort of a source of data that's a third party source that I have no control over. And we try and predict it a little bit. It's not about winning the money. It's just about using it as a device for causing a random event to happen in the future that we're trying to predict. But it's also a little bit exciting, like, ooh, what if we win $80 on a pick three ticket, which my group of friends and I did twice last year. We successfully predicted the lottery twice, which just gives a little bit of a zing. But it's so fun for people to come together and do remote viewing or do clairvoyance techniques, because funny little anomalies happen. Like this person over here is trying to view a target, but they ended up seeing the target to belong to this person over here. Mm. Or they both picked up some information. You know, there's so many different twists and turns that show that, wow, the subconscious universe and the unseen world is so vast, and the mind can really reach across time, and sometimes in ways that we didn't intend. So it's kind of a wild thing, a wild area of discovery. Like, wow, the mind can go anywhere to any time and get back some interesting information that can be verified. And that's what I love about remote viewing. It's not like making stuff up and like it may or may not be true. No, there's always verification, or most of the time there's verification, and that's called feedback. You get to see your feedback and verify that, yes, you were correctly or accurately perceiving a future event or an image that was maybe in an envelope or a video or something. So it's evidence-based, and that's the key thing about everything that I do. It's evidence-based or experience-based. It's not faith-based. So that's what I focus on. Then people can have their own experiences and use it in whatever way they want to answer their own questions or grow in whatever way they want for themselves. So I just offer people tools, but I don't offer belief systems. I don't offer dogma, and I don't offer anything else, basically. I'm just sharing techniques. So that's what Mind Possible is. And I had a week-long in-person retreat planned for early this year. And of course, because of COVID, had to cancel it. But that's the thing that feeds me the most from this work, is just sharing time and space with people, because so many friendships come out of this and this heart connection with the people. There's a lot of love. And I find that at the end of the day, the message of interconnectedness on the deeper level is the same as the message of love. Mm-hmm. And all the best qualities of a person: patience, openness, curiosity, fun, being non-judgmental. All of these messages are included in psychic training, at least in my experience and the way I teach it. So it's a loving thing. And there is a spiritual message there, but it's a non-dogmatic spirituality. The other thing I love about psychic experience is it transcends gender, sexual identity, cultural background, color of your skin, age, how much money you have in the bank. It transcends all of that. it cuts through all those differences and shows that every human being matters. Every human being is a valid piece of the universe. And I think when someone has a psychic experience where they connect with something bigger than themselves, maybe when you're feeling down or alone or scared, you can remember you had that experience and go, no, you know what? There's a deeper part of me and I can make it through. I might not feel great right now, but I had that experience to hold on to. And it's experience I gave myself, not that someone gave to me. So it's very empowering that way.
Yeah. Beautifully said. I mean, it makes interdependence real. Mm-hmm. Something that you read in a book or a mantra that you chant or whatever that is. So that's perfectly said. And Carrie has a question about connecting with people who have left their body. So I'm curious, have you had experiences where you've connected with people that have passed in these out-of-body experiences that you've had?
Yeah. I had a friend who died a few years ago. And soon, really soon after he died, I ended up leaving my body and I was taken to this place. And this is really strange. But I basically was put inside his perspective and I was being shown his transition experience right after he left. And again, it was very symbolic. And it was about, so I was seeing the world through his eyes on the other side. And he was part of this theater. There's a theater, the stage, and he was waiting in line. And it's as if people who had just recently crossed over were walking across the stage, taking their final bow, removing their costume. It was like their costume was their personality they had during this past life that they had. And he got to do the same thing. And then we all walked out together. And I remember the sense of joy he was expressing. And he was looking up at the heavens. He was actually a Catholic priest, but he was looking up at the heavens, sense of gratitude, this thank you, thank you, thank you. And we were all feeling that way. Thank you for the opportunity we had to be alive in physical bodies on earth. And then I was with him as he went into the ocean down deep, deep, deep for a long period of rest. And he was a good friend of mine. So I knew that in his life, he had a lot of personal challenges, a lot of things to work and struggle against. And I think maybe he needed a period of rest to recover from that after he had crossed over or not. And, you know, I don't know for sure, but that's the experience. That's the information that I got. So a sense of celebration and gratitude and the fact that we have these personalities on earth, but they're just temporary and they're meant as opportunities to learn. And that's what I realized from his experience. And then from my own is that the gift of having a human body in this life is so precious. And it's from having our limitations and our struggles that we learn so much. And so one thing I definitely want to be sure to say is that I don't practice actively having out-of-body experiences. Now they happen spontaneously, but just because I'm tuned to it. But I don't try and have them anymore because when I was actively training on a regular basis, I'd have to leave my bed in the middle of the night to go do a certain technique, similar to the wake back to bed method from lucid dreaming. So similar to that, go to another room and train for a couple of hours and then try and leave my body. But after I realized the gift of our limitations, I realized I'm leaving the bed where my wife is. And like me, we only have a few years together in our human bodies. Why am I trying to go be my non-physical self when I have this opportunity to like, to hold her, to stroke her hair, to be with her. We had a cat before he died at the time, like, to be with our cat and share the pillow with him and all this other stuff. You know, and I realized, okay, it's time for me to be here. I mean, I still love exploring psychically, but at the same time, I value my own limitations more than ever and the opportunity to share a life with my friends and my wife and my family. It's more precious than ever before. And I'm finding that I'm starting to focus more and more on people need regular down to earth help or support, or we all need to care for each other in very basic levels, as well as spiritually or consciousness related. So I don't know. I'm sort of going full circle.
That's beautiful. I got goosebumps here sharing that story. I mean, it's really It's beautiful. And it's so perfect because that's what I think. And I'm sure that answered Carrie's question. I'm like, where are you when I was going with you? And now I'm like, I don't know where I am anymore. I went wherever that was. But yeah, so it's just amazing. And so you have this book, Renegade Mystic. You also have Mind Possible, right? That's the name of your first book.
No, Defy Your Limits. That's a telekinesis book.
So Defy Your Limits. And then your website's Mind Possible. Mm-hmm. What do you want to share with everybody today? Like, what's the thing that you really want to share that you haven't already shared about the work you do or any of those things?
Okay, I hope it's not too dramatic. But one thing that I'm starting to realize, and it's on the theme of how we learn so much from our limitations and having these bodies and extending that to having this planet Earth, is I'm sure there are many other lovable planets in the universe, but still this planet that we have is so precious. And I think that more and more, and hopefully before it's too late, more people realize that preserving our planet is a highly important spiritual work. If you think about it, we start off as non-physical beings and we were born as little babies on planet Earth, and then we grow and have a human life and learn so much from it. So we need to take care of our classroom. We can't lose this classroom. And so I hopefully it becomes a trend. Hopefully people start to realize that just taking care of the Earth and taking some really drastic measures, maybe changing how we live in really important ways, preserving our planet will be such a gift that we can offer to future generations, because there are co-students in this classroom. And we need to think bigger. I think the current human brain is not programmed to think hundreds or thousands of years ahead, or to think so globally. Is just not designed to think that way. But we need to train ourselves to think bigger. And we really need to work on saving our classroom and cutting out everything that gets in the way of that. I think that's going to be important work now and in the very near future. So I don't know what that looks like. I'm trying to figure that out for myself, but maybe they'll be out there who can help me, or we can help each other think that way. So I guess that's something I wanted to share. Yeah,
I love it. And I agree. I mean, it's up to us if we want to keep coming back here to take care of our great mother. So totally agree. I really loved having you on. An hour goes by so fast in here, doesn't it?
It does. And I really had a great time. I'm sorry we didn't get to hear more from you. Maybe I went on too long, but I really appreciated the opportunity to share.
Everyone gets to hear from me every day. Okay. All about my guests, for sure. Yeah. And no, I hope you come back, and I hope we can talk more as we go into 2021. We're starting a new segment called Surreal Stories, and we're going to be talking more about NDEs and alien encounters and all sorts of different things, but really the research behind it, because part of what Buddhist Biohacker is, and I know you know me, like, I'm very analytical and I love the research and the science behind all of it. And so I hope you come back and we can continue to talk about how the linear scientific research side can link up to the spiritual kind of woo-woo non-linear side, because they do work hand in hand. It's pretty amazing.
Yeah, I'd be happy to. Yeah, thank you so much.
Thank you. And thank you to everybody who's been watching and participating. Thank you for your comments. And you guys can always continue the conversation in our MeWe forum. It's M-E-W-E, MeWe.com. Very safe, privacy, social media platform with no censorship. So you can go there and we can continue the conversation at the Buddhist Biohacker Forum. I will be back tomorrow for Herbal Thursdays with Cheryl Garcia, the Colorado herbalist. And if you have not yet heard about the November Awakening event, there is a trailer here on the YouTube channel that I put up yesterday, and registration's free at oneheartoneearth.net. So don't forget to go there. We have 30 pre-recorded presentations, and we will also be live with 50 facilitators that week. I will be live for 56 hours and counting. So definitely come and be a part of that. It's during our United States election, so we can use all the vibrational support we can during that time. So thank you so much, Sean. And thank you to everybody who's watching. Have an amazing day. And we'll talk to all of you soon.